Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Coleman, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Clempire, with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Hey, man.
How's
what
that?
Is going on
not,
here?
Not too much. Got that one on the first try. I remember to press the red button this
week.
Yeah, good.
So I just want to say before we start, you know, the Q&A and all that.
Right.
I just want to say happy Pride Month to you.
Oh, thank you.
Because I know you're part of that community.
Sure.
The LGBTQ high five, whatever they call the community. And I know this is a big month for you guys.
Well, you know.
You know, because you're part of that community.
Well,
and
yeah,
this
as
is
you
a big
continue
month.
To say.
And
I'm not going to argue.
I just want to say happy Pride Month to you.
Thank you, man.
Now, what I want to know is, what makes this month any different from any other month of the year for your community?
I'm not sure.
Are you sucking more cock?
No, I'm not. I'm not.
You know, are you going around beating up lesbian midgets?
No.
You know,
no more than usual.
I know you have more parades.
Yeah, not me personally, but
you know,
there.
I mean,
I know
your
there
community,
was a,
and I respect your community.
Well, you know, it's
having their month.
It's a big tent. Yeah.
It's their month, and
you know, sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. But anyway, so I just wanted to say before we get going on the show is happy Pride Month to you,
okay.
Renee.
Well,
and you and
you,
your
man.
Community.
Okay.
You know? All
just
right.
To make that perfectly clear.
Yeah.
It's very thoughtful.
Yeah, well, you'll get to know me. As you get to know me through the show, you'll think I'm a very nice person.
Yeah, yeah.
I already do.
Yeah, I'm a very nice person.
Okay.
Very kind.
Making friends already.
You know, and, you know, now I'm not part of that community. You know, but I respect that community.
Sure.
You know,
there's still time.
Yeah, you know, but yeah, so I just wanted to get that out.
Yeah, it's not too late,
Manny. Yeah, I just wanted to get that out there to you.
Well,
so did you do anything special this month? I mean, there's still 2 weeks left.
Well,
a lot left to go for you.
Not for Pride, no. I didn't do anything special, but I did do something special.
You had a lot of shame this month. Is that what you had?
No.
You had more shame than Pride this month?
No, well, I always have a lot of shame,
you know.
But it has nothing to do with Pride Month.
Or what has to do with your community, though?
No, it just has to do with it's more internal than external.
Okay.
Learning to get good at anything, and particularly music, I think is a shame-based operation. Like sometimes in rehearsal, you'll point something out to someone, they're playing something incorrectly, and they're like, ouch, you know, it's a dig on them. It's like, that's not a dig. I'm just this is the truth. I'm pointing this out. And they're like, yeah. I point out that this is a shame-based exercise. You know, it's like we're relying on your sense of shame to motivate you to not make these mistakes. And
has anyone ever done that to you?
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's how I was trained.
Okay.
No, I think that's basically how everyone is trained as a musician.
Because you were an altar boy, too, right?
No, I wasn't. I was I was refused. I tried to be, but they wouldn't take me. They could tell I had a big mouth. So they could,
yeah, your community knows that, too.
Well, they could tell I couldn't keep a secret, I guess, is my point.
Right, so you're pointing out that people are bad at music.
Well, no. I'm just talking about shame as a motivator.
Oh, okay.
and how it's underrated. It's very effective. So don't go bad on shame. It definitely has its place. But I would say I did do something special this weekend. Took my wife to Galatoire's.
What is Galatoire's?
Galatoire's is a restaurant there on Bourbon Street and St. Louis or Conti. It's close to Conti and it's on Bourbon Street. Fantastic old school New Orleans restaurant, white tablecloth, you know, tile
you
floor.
You went there to shame her.
No. I went there to celebrate her. And and we had DJ Michael Dominici as our waiter. Shout out to Michael Dominici. He's the best. What a sweetheart. So and you know, going to Galatoire's, it's a very high end restaurant, but very old school New Orleans. And as prices have risen at other restaurants,
service has fallen.
No. Sir,
usually how it happens.
That's especially in this town.
No,
yeah.
I mean, so as prices have risen at other restaurants, even like kind of dinky restaurants, like you know. Like around your house, you know, they have like the Café des Gars and stuff like that. I mean, that's a nice restaurant, but it's no Galatoire's, I would say. But the prices at Galatoire's has kind of held steady. to where it's actually a real bargain compared to a lot of other fine dining restaurants in New Orleans. And the food is, you know, unbeatable, and the service is
great.
Well,
they like that restaurant in Mississippi that got busted. They said serving fresh Gulf fish, and they weren't.
Yeah, Mary Mahoney's,
yeah,
I think.
Mahoney.
I've been there a few times.
Where was the fish from?
It was China.
Yeah.
It was in China. Like everything else, China.
Right.
It's plastic.
Now, what is the deal about Galatoire's?
You have to be
a member?
No. Now, it helps if you have your own waiter, because if you show up and you don't have a waiter, they know you're a neophyte.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, someone who's new to something, they don't have any experience, they don't know their way around
That would be like every other person who dines there, because they're all from somewhere else, right?
Well, no, a lot of locals go there, and a lot of locals go over and over. I mean, I've been to Galatoire's probably, I don't know, 30 times in my life. Some people go every Friday. Like attorneys, it's a big thing to go there for lunch on Fridays to Galatoire's. And but it's also
so you went there to break up with your wife.
Went there to celebrate her birthday, and a lot of other people were celebrating their birthday. Now at Galatoire's, when it's your birthday, the waiter will, if he knows it's your birthday, he'll bring you out a caramel custard with a candle in it, and the bangs on the glass, you know, ting ting ting, and announces that it's your birthday, and the whole room sings happy birthday to you.
That's so, like any restaurant.
Really?
I've seen that happen at any restaurant.
Okay. Well, anyway.
I'm not a big caramel fan, though, but I'm sure
caramel custard. It's a New Orleans dessert. You know, it's a whole thing. I love it. Anyway, so that was lovely. Shout out to, again, Michael Dominici's and Galatoire's. Don't sleep on Galatoire's, people. Well, Manny, you texted me. You want to talk about this grievance with Alice Cooper?
Well, I was, but then you told me that he's done this before, so what's, you know, I don't,
well, but
I don't
now
understand.
He's doing it again.
Yeah, well, I mean, he says he's on, he's, I guess he does it when he goes on tour. He says he's the troubled man for troubled times.
Right. Now, he did it after you did it, so he didn't beat you to the punch. You were already using this phrase when, I think, the first time.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe we should sue him.
Yeah. Did you ever trademark that phrase?
Yes, I did.
Okay, well, then you definitely have some litigation. Maybe you should...
It's too bad, because I used to like the guy.
Yeah. Well, those first couple of records were terrific, man. That band, Killer or Love It to Death, whatever, those first few were outstanding.
All I remember is Only Women Bleed.
Okay.
That's true.
The ballad, the big
hit
ballad.
Every time I punch my wife, she bleeds.
Okay.
You know? That's his best song, I think.
Life imitates art.
You know, Only Women Bleed.
Okay.
Smokes and drinks and don't come home at all. Yeah, good times,
good
man.
Good times.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so whatever about him. I don't know.
Right. All right,
him.
Well, moving on.
Yeah.
Well, now the nation may have heard me talk about this assessment fight I was in with first the Orleans Parish Assessor's Office.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they like doubled the assessed value on one of my properties year over year. And I came back to him. I disputed. I said, "No, it can't be correct. You know, it didn't double in value from last year to this year." So okay, well,
maybe they found out you were going to Galatoire's, so they said, "Oh, this guy's got money."
Yeah, well, I don't think it's supposed to.
Waiter DJ ratted on you.
Yeah, I mean, if he went back in time, he'd need a time machine to do that. Anyway, well, just to cut to the chase, I eventually appealed it all the way up to the state level, the state board of review. They sent their own independent assessor out, who came out with a value even lower than what I was asking for. And I said, they said, well, here's the hearing date. I said, well, I'm going to be out of town. I can't make that hearing date, but I completely agree with your independent evaluation, and I'll go with that amount.
So you're a slum landlord, basically.
No. This has nothing to do with how I maintain the properties or how I service my tenants. This has to do with how much tax money
the state is extracting. Explain.
Well, you know, where I show up, you have a problem with your property, I show up and deal with it.
I thought you were talking about something else.
No. I have a hand.
Back to the month of June.
Hands-off operation with the tenants. I can only get you in trouble. So anyway, so they came back. They didn't go as low as their independent appraisal, but they went lower than I requested. So I'm going to count that as a win. It wound up being 25% less than what it would have been otherwise. So I fought the law and I won, Manny.
So the moral of the story is keep pushing.
Well, he's got time. Level. He's got time. Well, I mean, he doesn't do anything except go. You know, he goes a gig every once in a while. He's got plenty of time.
Well,
Galatoires.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. That's how I get to go to Galatoires.
Yeah, he's got plenty of time.
Don't throw money out the window. Well, I had something fun happen the other day. It was kind of surprising. You know, the Gardenia Moon, who I think
Gardenia Moon.
Yes, she first showed up on the podcast, referred to as Tic Tac Girl.
Right.
And now, Gardenia Moon, come to find out, she's a very charming singer and songwriter and piano player. And I'd seen some stuff that she'd put up on social media, and I thought, wow, this is really sweet, man. I really like what she does. And she actually called me, and I wound up going and playing bass on a couple of tracks for a recording project that she's doing. And man, she's terrific.
Really? All I know is she just knows how to suck down those Tic Tacs.
Well, I think she's off the Tic Tacs. Yeah. I think that was
sucks them down.
Yeah, I think she's. I didn't hear any
like
rattling.
The plane's going down.
In the
that's
purse.
What she's doing. You know?
No, I think she's good with the Tic Tacs. But man, she's maybe have her on the show sometime. She's.
I don't think.
Terrific
so.
Artist. Okay, well we'll see.
I don't think so.
Well, Manny, you had some other sad news this week, right?
What happened?
Jerry West.
That was just today or yesterday.
Yesterday. That was this week.
Yeah, he was a good guy, Jerry. He was my friend, and I grew up watching him. And he actually, his first house that he lived in L.A. was in my neighborhood.
Huh. Now, he was like a star player for the Lakers and maybe some other team before that.
No,
also
he was
coach.
Always a Laker.
Okay.
He was a Laker.
Then he was the coach, and then he was
coach,
like, what, general
GM,
manager?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the people need, we don't need to explain his history. People know. They don't know.
Well, not everybody. Not everybody's a basketball fan.
Yeah, he was Mr. Clutch, and he's the logo.
Right,
you know?
Right, the NBA logo.
Sorry to see him go, but people die.
Sure.
He's in his 80s, and he died. It was funny, though, because another SoCal icon, Bill Walton, died a week before him, and they're total opposites, those guys. But it's sad to see them go.
Bill Walton was kind of a hippie, huh?
Yeah, he was a dead. I saw him at some Dead shows every once in a while. And he took acid.
Took a lot of acid, yeah.
He was a good guy. And he suffered from stuttering, but yet he became a broadcaster. So that's... That's kind of cool, you know. He overcame his his retarded stuttering or whatever you want to call it.
it was all the LSD.
Yeah,
probably.
Well, it's probably helped him. Freed him up, man.
Yep, absolutely,
it freed him up big time.
Wide open,
you know. But what I want to talk about is all these tornadoes that have been going on all over the country. A friend of mine who lives in the Midwest, his house got pummeled by a tornado and tore it all to shreds.
Oh, terrible.
And he's not even worried about the house. He's more worried about his wife because when they went to sort of salvage stuff, she found all his porn.
Oh, geez.
You know, she found all his porn. And so now he doesn't have a house. You know, she's finding a lawyer. And all this guy. Because some of the porn is like grandma porn. He's into that stuff.
His grandma?
Yeah. No, not his grandma.
Okay. Well,
maybe I don't know.
That would be.
Maybe your grandma. I have no idea.
Definitely not my grandma.
Yeah, you know, so I'm not going to mention his name.
No, don't.
His name is Tony, actually.
Okay.
Well. But I'm not going to really mention more about it. Tony Johnson is his name. But, from St. Louis. But yeah, they got ripped apart.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This whole house.
That.
She found the porn. You know, the kids are crying. You know, daddy.
Goes from bad
this?
To worse, man.
You know, is that granny? That's not our granny. Nana. You know, that kind of stuff. Anyway, I support you, Tony. If you need a place to live, don't call me.
Okay.
All right, because I got my own porn problem.
Sure.
Someone else's grandma.
Yeah. Well, I'm not into granny porn.
Okay.
I'm not into that shit, man.
Yeah, we don't need to know.
You know, we don't need to know what I'm into. No. But we know you're into.
Okay, well.
You and your community.
Okay,
you
know, I'm not sure you do, but.
You know.
Feel free to speculate.
It's, I will.
Oh, I know you will.
Yeah, and I'll post it out there.
Okay.
I don't post things.
I don't know
how to do it.
Right.
I have no idea how to post things. So I'm safe. Things. You know, but anyway, yeah, I feel sorry for my friend
it's
Tony
terrible.
Johnson from Missouri. So he'll get it together, though.
Right on. Our thoughts and prayers go out to you, Tony.
Yeah.
Well, I saw in Florida also they had some torrential rains yesterday.
Good.
It makes me want to. You see the people walking around in waist deep water there in like Miami area. It's terrible, man. You see that kind of having been in floods in New Orleans. You know what that does to a house, man. It's
I could care less about Florida.
Okay,
they deserve it. The ex-president lives there. DeSantis lives there. Fuck them.
But not all those other people. That's they don't deserve it. They're just
The Cubans don't deserve it.
Yeah,
those Cubans. They're good people.
Plenty of non-Cubans that don't deserve it as well.
You know, and all the Jews, they don't deserve it either.
No, and all the Gentiles, they don't deserve it either.
Wait, there's Jews in Florida?
Yeah,
they got Jews. Gentiles.
Go figure.
They must have just shown up.
Yeah,
new development.
Sure. Well, populations are mobile.
At least it's not here. You know, I'm glad it's in Florida, here. I can give a fuck
small
about
favors,
Florida.
Sure. Well, anything else, Manny?
No.
Okay, well, I'll give one more shout out to Louisiana great musician Leon Medica, great bass player, producer, band leader of Louisiana's LaRue band. He was co-writer on New Orleans Ladies, but he was
in Florida.
I'm sure he played in Florida, but at one time that band LaRue, before they were LaRue, they were like Gatemouth Brown's backing band, played all over the place around the Southeast, and Leon was a huge influence on a lot of people, produced a lot of records for Louisiana artists, and he just passed away, so we will be missed. All right. Well,
rough room.
Yeah, it's a rough room. Yeah. Well, speaking of rooms, we have a few. One former guest here in Gogo Borgerding is sitting there at the bar, and also a longtime listener, fan, supporter, Robert Rothman, sitting there at Snake and Jake. So we have some people come in just to absorb the ambiance of the Troubled Men podcast. Okay. Maybe we should get to our guest, Manny.
Yeah,
okay. Well, it's a terrific guest we have tonight. We've been working on getting him on for a while. We are tenacious, if nothing else. He is a fantastic keyboard player, singer, band leader, co-founder of the supergroup, the New Orleans Suspects. He's also owner and music director of the New Orleans Schools for Rock. He's got, I think, two of them in the area here.
I do.
One in Metairie and one on the North Shore. He's been touring internationally for 25 years, and he's had a fascinating career. We're going to get into all that, but without further ado, the great Mr. C.R. Groover. Welcome, C.R.
Thank you guys so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Now, C.R., I don't know what your real name is. Now, I don't know if you keep that real hidden. I have another friend, Chuck Prophet, but for a while he went under the name C.W. Prophet, his actual initials.
Okay.
And people would think that's a made-up name, right? Country and Western Prophet or something.
Right.
And I'm guessing with you, C.R. Groover. People think that's a made-up name.
Completely,
you're a
absolutely.
Musician.
Yeah.
But it's not.
It's not. It's a lot to live up to.
Okay. Now, as a child, when you had that name, did people already have comments about it, or did you have an inkling?
It was pretty painless, because you have a built-in nickname, Groovy.
Okay.
Which, as you know, as a kid, being a scrawny little redheaded dork like myself, there could be could have been a lot worse.
You'd
nicknames.
Take it. Yeah, you're happy. Right? You're happy so, with that group.
The fact that that's what landed on me, I was like, sure, I'll take it.
Sure,
all day long.
So you were a redhead as a kid?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's like both of my children are redheads.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, it's the best. I love redheads.
They say it builds a lot of character.
I know you do.
As a child, I was obsessed with redheads. We had this one family who the mom was a redhead, and they had four redheaded children.
Yeah.
And, I mean, to me, they're like, redheads are almost like a different species. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
Like space aliens.
Yeah.
You know?
we'll pop out of anywhere. It doesn't matter what color you are, what color your hair is. You could have a redhead at any moment.
So your name is really CR?
Since birth, it's been CR.
CR, doesn't stand for anything.
Yeah.
CR.
As far as you know.
Okay.
Sure.
All right.
Okay, well, let's dig in a little bit of your... You're not a New Orleans native, CR, right?
I'm not. I've been here... It'll be 18 years in October.
Okay.
I was born and raised outside of Philadelphia.
Oh, okay.
Suburb.
Philly soul, yeah.
Right. Actually,
man.
Ironically wearing the Philadelphia Spectrum t-shirt right now.
Nice.
Which
nice,
was like
man.
The indoor hockey venue, basketball, 76ers, Flyers.
Okay.
And every concert I ever saw growing up. So
you grew up in Philadelphia?
I grew up there. I was there till I was about 26 years old.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
And that's Philadelphia is kind of a garbage town, don't you think? I
mean, absolutely.
It's one of those places that, you know, your team wins and you riot. they set the downtown
it's
on fire.
It's got a lot of heart and soul. It really does. They have they want to be New York really badly.
Uh-huh. And they got a big chip on their shoulder.
A big chip on your shoulder. But the thing about New York or the Philadelphia that's great is, and I think it's in a lot of ways, it's like New Orleans. It's mm-hmm. like, you know where you stand with the people you're hanging out with.
Yeah.
Right? When you say, yo, fuck you.
Right.
It's not like you want to fight somebody. It's like, this is what I think about you.
They don't put on airs.
We're cool. There's no airs at all. Right. You know right away. So that's refreshing.
Yeah. No, I like the character of Philly. It's just definitely like Baltimore, like New Orleans, one of those garbage
right. Once you get to D.C. and North, it's like you've entered that region.
Right,
you know?
Right. So, well, and Philly does have a huge soul tradition. I mean, it's...
Oh, full, yeah.
So were you into all that as a kid growing up?
Not so much. I was more like classic rock and roll, progressive rock.
Okay.
I was classically trained as a 10-year-old till I was about 13.
You have a musical family?
Not really. My mom's father was a baritone singer in a church, like an operatic singer.
And how'd you wind up getting interested in piano?
Well, we had a piano at the house.
Okay.
And so it was the kind of thing where my parents played a lot of records growing up. My dad came to New Orleans on what he would call business.
Okay.
About four times a year.
Finger quotations.
Right. Air quotes.
To visit his community?
Yeah, that's right.
Monkey business.
Yeah. I learned years later that what exactly he was doing, which is, you know, he was actually friends with Al Hurt.
Oh, cool.
And Pete Fountain and kind of hang with those guys, but he'd bring back a lot of records.
Oh, nice.
So I was raised, I was surrounded by that kind of music, show tunes, stuff like that, and we had a piano at the house. So from a very young age, I would start just playing little melodies on the piano, like when I was 4 or 5 years old.
Right.
And it was just something that I was always drawn to, you know. Fascinated by.
It's always great to have a piano in the house. It's the one instrument where you can actually teach yourself about music just by fucking with it.
Yeah.
Because it's so linear. It's
totally.
So visual.
It's easy to hit the keys down.
Right. it's easy to get a sound out of. Yeah. But you can actually kind of figure out how music works by spending enough time at the keyboard.
Yeah. And I tried the sports thing probably the time I was 6 to 10. Terrible athlete.
Didn't pan out. No, I can see
so
that. Like myself, you look like you're about the kind of athlete I am.
Yeah. The asthma didn't help.
Sure.
the debilitating allergies were not.
But it helped. It helped with your practicing because
I couldn't go outside.
Right.
The allergies were so bad. Uh-huh. Yeah. So I spent my childhood just playing piano. You know, hours a day, and it definitely was.
And the more you did it, the better you got.
It's amazing how that works.
Yeah. Repetition, really.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's how I got into it, really. It was classically trained in the beginning, from the time I was 10 till about 13, and then smoked my first joint, and then that was it. It was Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and Yes and Rush, and, you know, I went down that path.
And you started a band.
And then we started a band.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, the hardest thing playing in a band when you're 13 years old is not the playing in it. You know, we can rehearse and... You get a little PA system. You're in your garage or your parents' basement. It's getting
it's the chicks
gigs.
Trying to get the girls.
The chicks are at 9.
Yeah.
So you're playing Girl Scout gigs and stuff. You know, it's not what you're dreaming of when you start.
Well, you got to start somewhere, you know.
We did, yeah. So. That's where we started.
Right on.
Now, you like Rush. See, that's one band I could never...
Yeah, hear. I loved them.
Ugh.
Okay. I was more Yes and ELP, to be honest.
Yeah, but Rush...
But like later, like in high school, in the mid-80s, Rush...
Rush is... I don't think I know any woman who likes Rush.
I don't think I do either. Yeah, did they have a woman at a concert? I've been to a couple.
I've never been to a concert. I couldn't tell you. Yeah, not many.
I have a good friend of mine who's a Rush freak, and I constantly argue with them. I go, they're one of the worst bands I've ever heard of.
What do you think about Steely Dan?
I like Steely Dan.
Oh, you like them?
Yeah,
okay.
I like Steely Dan. Now, Rush is one of those bands where before I ever heard them, just on paper, what I heard about them, I thought, oh, well, I would like this band. All good musicians, bass players, leader, you know, and then I heard him. I was like, no, I don't like
you don't
this
like
at
him
all.
Either.
That guy's voice.
Not one bit.
Yeah. Stan, that guy's voice.
Oh, see, that's not going to go very far then.
What's that?
If you don't like the singer's voice.
You don't like Eddie
Vedder's
voice.
It's like right there, you're just done.
Right.
Yeah. I was just like, no, this guy. It's like Aaron Neville. I can't stand that guy's voice.
Well, interesting.
I like Aaron Neville, but I'm not.
I thought you kind of had to, living in New Orleans.
Well, he's not from here.
You're not? Yeah. Oh, no, where are you from?
Los Angeles.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Now it's all coming clear.
Sure.
But go ahead, go on.
So you get into your first bands, like 13.
13.
You keep playing through.
Yeah.
You've met other kids.
So it was, we tried the original music thing very early on.
Mm-hmm.
And we were really into the Talking Heads, like early 1980.
Right on.
82, 83.
Sure.
That was our favorite band.
Yeah.
Loved David Byrne's presence, his stage presence, his songwriting.
He's an insect, you know.
I don't doubt it.
He's an insect.
Like a praying mantis.
Yeah.
I saw them the first time they played in New Orleans at the Warehouse.
What year was that?
It's probably 81.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's like the Remaining Light years.
This was, I think,
Brian
Buildings
Eno.
And Food, man.
Oh, yeah, even earlier.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I think that's the record.
I guess the Remaining Light was like 83.
Yeah, so it was...
So we kind of modeled our music out after that.
Okay.
Just quirky.
Could have done worse,
alternative.
Man.
Yeah. Although no one else liked it.
Okay.
But we thought we were awesome.
Yeah.
there was a thing called the Lunch Munch at my high school, which is where they would give, we had a lunch, like three lunch periods that combined were an hour and a half. So you would get 30 minutes of it. And then go to class for an hour of it.
Uh-huh.
But one day every spring, they would open that lunch break up for the 90 minutes and let everyone kind of hang out in the courtyard, and they would have these bands play.
Right.
Very cool thing to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
My band was accidentally chosen, I believe, accidentally.
Nice.
Because we were shocked.
Uh-huh.
We were psyched. One band was a Who cover band. The other band was playing like all the modern Dire Straits tunes and rock and like classic rock and roll.
Uh-huh.
They were both amazing.
Yeah.
And we were all this quirky little... Talking Heads, kind of whatever you want to call amalgamation of just a bunch of dorks, and we started playing. We had these original tunes worked out, and our lead singer is like the epileptic kind of freaking out, stage presence and singing like we're going for it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were halfway through our first song, and the power goes out. And it was the guy who was running the entire thing had gone into the science, like the chemistry class that the extension cord was plugged into, and he pulled the plug on.
Pulled the plug.
He pulled the plug, and they're like, "We don't know what happened."
Everybody's a critic.
And we're like, "I see you. Like, I can actually see you through the window.
I can
with
see
the plug
you
in your hand."
Yeah.
And that was our first gig. That's where it started.
But you, the student body was put on notice that C.R. Groover was a presence to be.
I'm not sure anyone talked to us. For about a month.
What was the name of your band?
We were called Aqua Nuance.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was 83.
Right on.
Oh, so that was, you're right in there in the.
And how old are you then?
Now or then?
No, then.
I was 13.
Oh, okay. Oh, God.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
So it was our first year of high school, which would have been ninth grade at point.
So you continue on playing through high school with these guys, or you find some other guys?
Yeah, we started playing other songs and start like cover tunes and stuff.
It's good to play other people's music because it helps you figure out what music is supposed to be.
I'll be honest, I wish we had just stuck with that.
Really?
Because it was definitely different, and we had a chemistry.
You were uncorrupted,
us,
yeah.
But
yeah,
that terrified all of us. I think it kind of shook us.
That experience, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. They were like, what are we doing wrong here? Why don't people like us anymore?
Again, it's a shame-based operation.
It was a shame-based operation, yeah. Yeah. Not for each other, but for everybody else.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But, we did... evolve and started playing cover tunes. And that was our first experience of, you can spend all this time in the basement, you can get as good as you can possibly be, and then what do you do with it at that age?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you have nowhere to play.
Right.
So we did do some Girl Scout events.
Sure.
Because some friends of ours, their moms were Girl Scout, you know.
Right.
Their daughters were Girl Scouts.
UNICEF fundraiser or something.
A couple little like basement parties.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Where like we were in the basement and everyone else was upstairs kind of thing, you know.
Sure, that works.
Because again, you know, we were playing that kind of music.
You ran them out. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We ran them out.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's okay.
You know, it still happens from time to time.
Hey, man, it's good to develop a callus for that kind of thing early on to where if it happens as an adult, you're like, hey, man, this has been happening since I'm 13. This doesn't mean shit to me.
I think that's exactly right. And that's the most important part of those experiences is that callus. It's a great word for it.
Right.
Where you're like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
You want to walk out, you don't like me? I like what I'm doing.
Look, I had a friend who was a great artist. He didn't really start performing in public till he was already an adult. Every time he would perform, people would freak out and love it, but he was always in a panic for 2 weeks before he would play a gig.
Yeah.
And he would be like, how do you not
freak out?
How are you not in a panic? I said, because I've been doing this since I'm fucking 13 years old. I've done it so many times. It's worn off. There's no panic left, man.
You're right. Yeah.
But plenty of shame, right?
Well, shame, you know, it's always there. You know, you try to stave it off. That's why you got to show up and kill it. You know,
yeah,
so
the shame is good for you.
It's a motivator.
It's a motivator.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this band actually holds together through high school, or you start playing with some other guys? Because I know you primarily as like a R&B funk, keyboard player, band leader, but I'm sure you have a wide range of stuff that you do.
Yeah, you know, it was a long journey. We went from this band to just kind of experimenting with different kinds of music. Ended up in a Grateful Dead cover band.
Sorry.
It's okay. I actually love the music, but okay. they were making money.
All right.
I remember the first time I played a gig with them, I made $200, and this is in 1989.
Okay,
so
got it was your attention.
Like a fortune.
Right.
Y'all actually make money doing this? All I have to do is play these songs, right? So that kind of propelled me into playing gigs in actual venues and buildings. So I'm 19 years old, playing in the city of Philadelphia in different places that have Grateful Dead cover bands and actually make money playing, you know, for people that liked what we were playing.
So you said Grateful Dead cover band. So there was more than one in town?
There were several.
Wow.
This is 89.
All right. So
they're
dead are still around in 89. Jerry's not dead.
Oh, yeah.
Yet.
Jerry's not dead yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
but they only came to Philly once a year.
Were you the best cover band, or who do you
say? Oh, God, no, no.
Who was the best?
There was a band called Splintered Sunlight.
And they were the best.
They were the one.
And
then there was Living Earth, which was like just beneath them.
Wow.
And these were the older cats, right? These were the guys that like you wanted to be. If you wanted to be at that level on the Grateful Dead circuit, right?
Right, okay. I guess
I think we had a lot more fun.
Yeah.
You know, drank more whiskey.
Yeah.
Played a lot looser.
You didn't have the pressure on you.
There was zero pressure.
Right.
Zero. There was no expectation.
So you wind up going to college at some point?
I did for a minute.
Like most successful musicians, we go for a little while, and then we go... We look around, we go, you know, I think most of you people are going to be selling shoes in a couple of years, and I don't want to be selling shoes, so maybe I should be on my way.
I would say my grades in my senior year weren't so good, right? So I applied to Penn State, and we went to Penn State to audition for the music department, music program. And because of my experience playing classical music, I pretty much tested out of all the 1 and 200 level music classes, right? So they offered me a scholarship to start as a 300 level music student, but I had to come to the summer semester because my grades were so bad that they're like, we shouldn't really even have you. But because
except
of your
you can play.
Your musical experience, right? We'll make an exception,
right?
So I actually graduated. I actually went to college before I graduated.
Mm-hmm.
So I go there in May. We graduate in June. I had this physics exam that I had to come back from college to take this exam, which I know I was going to fail.
Uh-huh.
And if I fail the exam, I have to be pulled out of college, right? It was classic because I go down to the cafeteria of the high school. I meet my physics teacher. I'm like, okay, I'm here for the test. He's like, great, I'll go up and get it. And I'm sitting there for like 20 minutes, half an hour. There's no sign of him. So I'm
So you left.
Eating soft pretzels and drinking Coca-Colas. I stayed because if I left, I would have failed high school.
Right.
He comes back like an hour later. And I'm not sure if he was having a meeting with the principal or what, but he's like, we can't find the test. I see why. He goes, we've looked everywhere. We can't find it. We're just going to give you a C. So you have a passing grade.
Wow.
And I graduated high school.
Right on.
Back to college. And college was fun. And it was, you know, I probably should have stayed more than 2 weeks this summer semester.
It was short tenure there.
I was on social probation within about a week. Okay. I got caught playing quarters in my dorm room with a bunch of kids. Uh-huh. You know, it was one of those things. You're like, oh my God, my parents aren't here.
Right.
It's college. Let's have some fun.
Freedom.
But, freedom. And as a 300 level music student, I was a composition major.
Uh-huh.
And they have this great music studio at Penn State. But you have to be a junior to be able to use this studio, right? So my thought was, being 18 years old, right? I'm going to talk to the dean of music and tell him I should have access to this music studio when the fall semester starts, because I'm basically a junior in music.
Right.
Even though I'm not at all a junior.
Right.
And he says, no, that's not going to happen. I'm like, yeah, but I've tested out of all the classes. I did all the legwork back when I was a kid to be at this level musically. So I think it would only be fair if you were to let me record in the studio. And he's like, you have to be a junior. Like, you have to have a certain number of credits, which equals to being a junior, right?
Was that guy Joe Paterno?
You would think so.
Yeah.
You would think so. And I didn't like that answer.
It wasn't Jerry Sandusky, though.
Oh, God. Thank God, no.
Okay.
Maybe the two of them together.
Yeah.
So you said, fuck off.
I basically said, I'm fucking out of here.
Yeah, okay. Good for you.
I know, right?
Yeah.
For better or for worse.
Because you can play your music on the streets, man.
That's what I did.
Yeah, that's what you did.
I actually bought a van with my college money, a minivan, and became a professional musician at that point.
Okay. Yeah. So that was 18, so you continued to play in Philadelphia for another 8 years or so?
Yeah, it was a bunch of different bands. You know, I can name them all, but who has the time? But yeah,
it's not important.
That was the idea, though, is like that was now
Rush.
My path. We did all Rush songs.
You were in a Rush cover band.
But yeah, that became the time when I was like, I'm going to make a go at this.
Right.
And I think I have the talent for it, and I definitely have the drive for it.
Right.
And now I'm fueled by desperation.
Yes.
Because I'm no longer college student.
You don't have anything to fall back on.
Nothing else left.
That's that.
It's gonna be. I have to prove this.
Yes,
to the world.
That cannot be overrated as a position to put yourself in.
I think every musician that goes for it has that moment of like, fuck, this is it.
I've burned every other bridge.
I'm doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
The only way out is through.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
Yes. Nice. I like it. So you do that now. You come straight to New Orleans at that point, or
no? So the first thing I did was, probably 26 or 27 years old. I've been playing a bunch of different bands, touring around that region. So like the Northeast, a little bit towards the South, like down to Richmond, Virginia. And my dad got sick, ended up passing away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. Before that, I moved down to Hilton Head Island to be in a band. My first actual, like, real touring band in the Southeast region. A band called Roscoe. And we were living in Hilton Head Island, and we were doing the whole, you know, quad state area of Atlanta, or Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, Alabama, even South North Carolina. So we're doing that region.
What kind of music are y'all playing?
It was, like, soul funk music. This guy was an amazing soul singer. I played in a Hammond organ, just exclusively Hammond organ.
Nice.
Dragged it around the country.
Yeah.
But it was great. It was, you know, we had a violin player, funky drummer, really funky bass player. And that was my first taste of like some real shit with some real crowds and some original music and the funk music, right? And an organ.
And what years is this?
So this is 2000.
So like Dave Matthews Band is kind of already
they were
happening
just and hitting and Hootie and the Blowfish were just hitting.
Right.
So like 95, 96.
So it's kind of it's a good time for something like that. These kind of jammy.
A lot of these bands were doing this, hitting
right,
the circuit.
Right.
Yeah. Funk music was starting to really come up. Dave Matthews was just like really hitting hard.
Right.
And like I said, Hootie.
Right.
And so that was the big, my first big touring experience.
Mm-hmm.
No.
And you like that? You like that?
I loved it.
There.
I love being on the road.
Yeah,
I'm a road dog.
Me too.
I just loved it. You know, we were in a box truck, basically like a U-Haul box truck that we had built, they had built bunks into,
uh-huh,
and just saved like the very back, probably fifth of the whole truck for gear.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd stack it vertically, pack it as hard as we could, close the door, and then we'd have these wooden bunks that they built in. With no air conditioning, touring through the southeast.
Oh, Jesus.
In summertime.
Oh man, talking about paying dues.
It was, but yeah, it was great,
right?
You know, you're like, I'm doing this. I'm living the life. You get out of the truck like, you know, a sweaty musician at a truck stop, and you thought you were the shit.
Again, right? Preparation for anything that comes after that. You've already been steeled against it.
Yes.
It's like when somebody brings me on the road nowadays, I show up, I have my snacks, I don't ask any questions,
right.
I don't complain.
You can be anywhere, anytime.
You know, they look at me like, how do you get, it's like, because I've been doing this forever. It's like,
yeah,
that's where you learn, yeah, to do this shit, you know?
And there's no cell phones back then.
Oh, no.
Right? We had you pull up to a truck stop and the band would get out of the truck and run towards the payphones because there'd be the bank of payphones.
Uh-huh.
And we had these things called chingers back then. There's these little devices that you, for Bell South especially, you hold it up to the mouthpiece of a payphone, and you would ching. So
it had a touch tone pad on it, right?
Yeah, and uh-huh, and the phone would think you were putting quarters in.
Oh wow!
So we wouldn't have to actually pay for
calls.
So you have your little you know phone book.
Uh huh.
And you call like, you know, whoever you had, your friends, you know, in Valdosta, Georgia. You're going to Valdosta, so you'd find your friends and you'd make your calls.
Find
or the tour managers,
to stay,
like
right,
trying to find a place to stay or advancing the gig.
Right.
It was a whole different world.
Yeah, man.
You've been there.
Yeah, and
pre-cell phone touring.
And, yeah, pre-cell phone, and you have a book, and then if you really wanted to treat yourself, you get a book light to where you could read once
no,
the sun went
that's
down.
Crazy talk. There's no light. But we did have, at that point, pagers were real popular,
hmm,
right? Okay. So we're able to give, you know, friends of ours around the country our pager number. So they'd beep you, and that's when you're like,
when the drugs were there,
we got it, right? We got to hit the payphones, and then you know who to call. But
nice, man.
Yeah,
making me wistful talking about those days.
Oh, it's crazy.
Oh. Well, man, this has been fascinating so far, and we got so much more to get into with your career with the New Orleans Suspects and all of your schools of rock. But Manny, this seems like a good time,
sure,
right,
yeah,
now. Huh?
We're running out of time, so we'll be Nation Knows What to Do, and we'll be right back.
Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet. I am Renee Coman, back with our guest, Mr. C.R. Groover. Now, C.R., I know you're new to the podcast, and welcome.
But, thank you.
All of our listeners know that we are a listener-supported operation here, the Troubled Men Podcast. We don't ask you to buy any special underwear or any sort of grooming products. We keep it simple. We have a PayPal link. We have a Venmo link in the show notes of every show, as well as in the pinned Facebook page. And our devoted listeners will reach out to us through those links and support the podcast, buy us cocktails, pay for our notebooks. I always say the Troubled Men Podcast runs on booze and notebooks. But that's not the only way to get to us, because we have some people who want to go old school, and they will actually send us mail at the bar.
Oh, wow.
They still do that?
And tonight we have a piece of mail. When I showed up, we have a piece of mail that was addressed to Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge, 7612 Oak Street, New Orleans, 70118, addressed to Renee Coman, Manny Chevrolet, Troubled Men Podcast. And it's from one of our longtime listeners and supporters. It has a card inside. It says, as Brian Johnson once said, Brian Johnson from AC/DC, of course, as Brian Johnson once said, have a drink on me.
Oh,
and he says,
amazing.
He says, isn't it about time that Manny get a stalker of his own? Question mark.
You don't have one?
Keep up the great work. Eddie V. That's from Eddie Voynich. So shout out to Eddie. And there's a $20 bill inside.
Oh, Eddie, that is amazing.
Crisp $20 bill. So shout out.
Buy a drink.
Shout out to Eddie Voynich.
Incredible.
And again, anytime I get mail at the bar, it makes me feel like Charles Bukowski, which I love. And
that is fantastic.
Yeah, isn't it? I love it.
I love it. Let me send him one of my records.
Okay.
He deserves that.
All right. Our guest, Mr. C.R. Groover from his great band, New Orleans Suspects, may send you a record.
I had a stalker. You should tell Eddie that. I did have a stalker back in the 90s, back in Los Angeles. And I don't want to say names, but it was Jennifer Aniston.
Okay.
You know, shoot, that fucking bitch would not stop bugging me, man. But I'm not going to go back.
Sure. I got
my restraining order. She's stayed away
moving
since
forward,
95.
Those were tough times, apparently.
Yeah, tough times. Because I was heavily sedated at that time, so I really couldn't have the power or the strength to
fight her off.
Fight her off.
Call her back.
Exactly, you know. So she'd pop in. You know, the chicks do the pop in.
You don't like the pop
in. No guy likes that.
Especially not if it's Jennifer Aniston.
No guy likes the
terrible
pop in, you know. So anyway, I don't want to get into it.
Right.
To our friend, she was a stalker.
All right, Eddie. Well, Manny's not left out of this.
Yeah.
He will be gratified to learn that.
But maybe he's going to start being our stalker.
Maybe so.
But I wanted to say, speaking of fans, I bumped into our friend Jeff Treffinger.
Yes. Love Jeff Treffinger.
And he was telling me that during Jazz Fest, he had a bunch of his old friends from New Jersey in town.
Right.
And he put them up at his house and his place and all that. And one of his friends asked about the Troubled Men Podcast and if he knew us.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff said, yeah, I know them. And his friend, and I want to give a shout out to this guy, his friend said, is it wrong to like Manny Chevrolet? That's what his friend said. And Jeff said, no, I don't think it's wrong to like Manny Chevrolet. So I want to give a big shout out to, his name is Chuck. Chuck Bishop or Bishop, I think.
I met Chuck.
And Chuck's a big fan of the show. So I told Jeff that, you know, Chuck should be listening for his shout out in the upcoming episode.
Right on, Chuck.
But I thought that was kind of funny. Yeah, Chuck, it's all right. It's all right to be wrong, okay? Don't worry about it.
If liking Manny Chevrolet is wrong, I don't want to be right.
Right, exactly.
There we go. And along those lines, I often forget, but I've remembered tonight, and here's the presentation of the Troubled Men Podcast stickers to our guest, Mr. C.R. Groover.
Thank you.
Not one, but two stickers. You have one to stick and one to hang on to.
Thank you. For the rest of my life.
Get out of jail free.
Let's go to my time machine.
There you go. Let's see, beyond that, to wrap up the housekeeping, follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook. We have the Troubleman Podcast t-shirts. The link is there in all the show notes. I would not waste time if you want to get them for loved ones. Christmas, you may as well get in there early.
Start now.
Yeah, start now. I'm forgetting something, but, you know, listen to another episode and catch up on all this housekeeping I'm leaving out. Back to our guest, Mr. C.R. Groover. So, C.R., just to move forward, you play there, you make your bones there in the Southeast, traveling around that hot box. It's almost like being in a Japanese prison camp, World War II. You know, when you get out, it's all roses after that.
Right.
So somehow you make your way down to New Orleans.
Yeah.
Now, how do you wind up starting? You just playing around here, trying to meet guys. Give us the thumbnail sketch of how the New Orleans Suspects come to be.
It was I moved here the year after Katrina, so it was 06, October of 06. Really, things were still new. You know, the city was rebuilding, and part of what I wanted to do was be a part of the rebuilding, just by offering whatever musical skills I had, and, you know, meeting people and playing music. And so, the Maple Leaf became my first home. Frenchie was kind enough to take me in.
Oh,
I was living in his gallery across the street from the Maple Leaf at the time on Oak Street.
That's cool.
The first night I slept on the floor until I saw what I guess you call them palmetto bugs here.
Cockroaches. No, we call them cockroaches.
They're fucking cockroaches.
Yeah.
Massive. It's probably the size of my thumb with wings.
Yeah, 2 inches.
And they're giant. And it was crawling across my chest.
Mm-hmm.
So I jumped up, obviously.
You?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Okay. It traumatized me, actually. And he had this pop
is on. Enough, it won't bother you.
Not anymore. Yeah, I'm fine with
it. Okay, good.
Yeah,
good,
it's
good.
Great.
Right,
it's 18 years later, I'm okay with
sure,
him.
Sure.
But he had a Papasan chair, and I was sleeping in his kitchen. So that was my bed for probably a month and a half or so, 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Is Frenchie still alive?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, he's killing it. He's doing great.
No, he would like to come on the show. We could have him on. Yeah,
he's great.
Yeah.
But he has this grand piano in his gallery. He's doing all of his painting there, and it's across the street from the Maple Leaf. So that was my introduction to New Orleans. Was I'm play piano all day long, and then at night the sun goes down, Maple Leaf starts up, bands every single night. I was Frenchie's buddy, so it was, you know, he introduced me basically to the city.
Nice.
Ivan Neville, George Porter, all the cats that I met them on a level where. A friend of a friend kind of thing.
Right.
You know, so I was very fortunate, plugged directly into the scene.
Very cool.
And I met a guy named Jake Eckert.
Mm-hmm.
So my first gig was with Kevin O'Day.
Oh, okay.
I moved to town on a Saturday, and I had every Sunday at the Maple Leaf as C.R. Groover and Friends.
Right on.
I knew nobody.
With Kevin O'Day.
With pulling. Kevin. So it was me and Kevin.
Beloved Kevin O'Day. You know, sadly, Kevin passed away so early. It's like older guys, I think, well, I know I need to get to that guy soon. But Kevin O'Day,
we
lost him so early.
Loss.
Yeah.
He and I were really good friends.
Great guy.
So
great
we did.
Drummer,
we played as a duo every Sunday for, well, until Joe Crown and Russell Batiste. And
took over that slot.
Took over the slot, yeah.
Well, you know, that was the former The Iguanas played the Sunday night for about, for like starting, and like I started, that was when I started in the band, 1990. We had the gig for like 6 years or something.
And y'all probably drew some people.
Oh, we packed it out.
Right.
Yeah.
We drew no one.
It was the biggest night of the week at that time. Anyway, what a great training ground.
It was amazing.
Playing there with all those people and them getting to hear you because it's a late night place. People will come off of other gigs and show up and just hang around and have cocktails.
It slowly built up. I think the best thing that came out of it was this, you know, hanging out at Kevin O'Day's house, and Jake Eckert is there, who is a guitar player from The Suspects.
Right, former guest. Yes, we love.
Oh, good. Yeah. He was at the time touring with the Dirty Dozen.
Right,
and he and I just hit it off. And so
y'all kind of look like you could be related.
Everyone thinks we're brothers.
No one said that.
We got to get to a point in the road where you're like, fine, fuck it. Yes, we're brothers. Just whatever.
When was he on the show?
Jake was on the show. He was here with us at, in the last 2 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
So Kevin O'Dea was part of this band called Posse, which was also Sam Hotchkiss.
Okay.
Jake Eckert, myself, and we played a couple shows at the Maple Leaf. It was basically like whenever somebody didn't show up for a gig, or if they didn't book a show accidentally,
they'd just call y'all.
They would call
minute.
Us up. Yeah. Nice. And that's how we got our name. The usual suspects is Hank Staples, the owner, would have like a short list of people he would call when
okay.
he needed a band. Uh-huh. Right? So it became that. So it was Reggie Scanlon, Jake, and myself, Kevin O'Dea. We had Kevin Harris on sax at that point.
Okay.
And that's how the suspects started. That was the original inception. And Hank's like, yeah, I just call the usual suspects whenever I need uh-huh. a gig, you know, right. a band play. And so we were one of those bands, luckily. It had to be when all the planets aligned, where the Radiators weren't touring, when the Dirty Dozen wasn't touring, we were all available.
Uh-huh.
And then Kevin went away, and Willie Green was right there in the neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
and always like, we got to play together.
Right.
He's the first person to nickname me Charlie, because when I met him, he goes, man, I saw you play last night. What's your name? And I was like, I'm C.R. Groover. He goes, C.R. Groover. He's like, I can't call you C.R. I'm going to call you Charlie. I'm like, you're Willie Green, you can call me whatever you want. So he took Kevin O'Dea's place, and that's what kind of formed the first inception of the suspects.
Uh-huh.
Was Jake and myself, Willie Green, Reggie Scanlon, and Kevin Harris. So when the Neville Brothers and the Radiators and the Dirty Dozen weren't on tour,
uh-huh.
is when we would actually get together
okay.
and play.
Right.
Jake was building a studio in his backyard in his shed.
Right.
Which is now like a really nice studio.
Yeah, I've done two
shack.
Records there.
It's
two
great,
John
right?
Mooney records there. Yeah,
great
yeah,
equipment, yeah. great vibe.
Jake is terrific.
He's got it
what
dialed in.
Yeah,
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 he's awesome. Yeah. And so we would kind of be the people to test out his new gear.
Okay.
And that's where the first record came from, was just trying out new gear and getting to know each other musically. And that's kind of how it all kicked off.
Nice.
And
nice.
That was 2009 it started.
Nice.
It was like 16 years ago.
Man. And so, and you guys, you know, with all those connections, you know, with the Reggie Scanlon, you know, from the Radiators, a beloved band that
yeah.
that has devotees all around the country, because all these, the people would come to Tulane, they'd become Radiators fans,
that's
they'd
right.
go back wherever they came from.
It was the indoctrination.
They were still Radiators fans. They all, you know, keep up with Reggie. And then you had Willie Green from the Neville Brothers. They had toured internationally. And so you have all this horsepower
yeah.
that, you know, I could see that. Plus the band actually being great, you know, great,
yeah.
great players. And I think Reggie told me, because we had Reggie on the show real early on, before the pandemic. He was actually back at the Ring Room.
Coolest dude ever.
What a yes, yes, absolutely. Still is.
Yeah.
And he was saying, yeah, you know, we said, like, everybody get two tunes and bring two tunes that you want to do
yeah.
to the recording session. Now, I remember hearing you guys early on, and you covered Wet Willie's Countryside of
Life.
Oh,
yeah. we started playing that one again recently.
I love that song.
It's
now,
great tune.
I just saw Wet Willie a couple of weeks ago.
Ah, really?
At this friend of ours party over in Uptown. And Jimmy Hall sings
yeah.
as good as ever.
Are you serious?
He sings.
One of the greatest singers.
He sings
ever
great.
In rock
also,
and roll.
Great tenor player, great harmonica player. But he's a good tenor player, man. He's got
I
a nice sound
that.
On the horn. It sounds like my father playing tenor, actually. He's got a very similar tone.
Wow.
And so I saw this gig with his brother playing bass, the original bass player, which apparently somebody was saying the brother doesn't always play
That's
with
amazing.
Him nowadays, but he was at this gig because this guy was an old, Sidney Smith is an old friend of theirs back from the Warehouse days. But and
wow.
I actually saw Wet
wow.
Willie play at the Superdome at the Day of Southern Rock and Roll in about 1974
Shit.
Or 5, like the first year the Superdome was open. So
that's amazing.
But
now, why
amazing.
Is he wet?
I don't know. Well, I mean, there's nobody.
His name's not Willie either.
There's nobody named Willie in the band either. I don't know what that was about. I think Wet Willie is like where you lick your finger and stick it in your friend's ear.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's called a Wet Willie.
That's what you name your band. Your community would know more.
That's not anything.
That was an LA thing.
Not a term people used in New Orleans either. I learned that term from The Simpsons, actually. But anyway, not. Oh, yeah. I would never do that thing.
Maybe that was a Northeast thing, because we definitely did that.
Oh, okay. Must be. Matt Groening is, I don't know where he grew up, but he knows that term. But how did I get on the subject? We're talking about the beginning of
Suspects.
Of the Suspects, yeah. And you guys playing this. And so you're playing all around. Get a reputation playing a lot of festivals all over the place.
Yeah, 2011 happened to be the year that the Radiators broke up, as did the Neville Brothers.
Stop playing. Retired.
Thank you. Stop playing at least full time, right?
Yeah.
Last Watusi.
Thank goodness.
They still play. They still play, so they didn't break up. They just, Ed Volker didn't want to go on the road anymore.
Yes. And it was good for us because now Reggie was available. Willie was available.
Right.
Jake, of course, was Dirty Dozen Brass Band, and who played 230 shows a year.
Oh, yeah.
So he would squeeze Jake in. You know, he would leave the road from the Dozen and jump on tour with the Suspects. Meanwhile, he had a one-year-old son at that point.
Yeah.
He didn't come home ever.
Yeah.
That first couple of years, but that's kind of where the touring started, right? And so we plugged ourselves into those Radiators markets.
Nice.
And we had a built-in following in the beginning, to be able to tour and have people show up.
Right.
It was great. Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
I'll jump now to say. The first time, so I'd heard your name for years. I'd seen you play. You're kind of a reserved guy a little bit. I am kind of a shy person, in spite of how I appear on this podcast, in spite of how effusive I am with you once we've met. But the first time we ever played together was just this year, I think, or starting, within the last 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
And you wound up on this Loose Cattle gig.
Yeah, loved it.
Now,
the Rectacular.
You played the Christmas show. That was your first gig.
Yeah.
And so I knew you were a very capable player, but you're standing next to me and I'm sharing my charts with you and I'm listening to you play and I'm thinking, fuck, okay, I got nothing to say to this guy, man. He's got everything he plays. every part he plays is great. Every sound choice he makes, you're going to play piano, whether you're going to play organ, what organ stop you're going to use. It's all, it's like, well, I got nothing to say. That's perfect. Perfect choice, man.
I love it.
Well, I mean, that's what we really love about other musicians, like being a seasoned musician, where somebody shows up and you don't have to tell them anything. It's like, just play. You know, it's like after a while, you just go, well, what can I tell you about this next song? Just do what you're going to do. Whatever you think is right will be great.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that about New Orleans musicians in general. And I've learned so much here. One of the first things that really struck me was how welcoming people here are, musicians are, especially if you listen, right? And if you prepare, and if you're nice, if you're cool,
right,
if you can get along. It's that simple. It's like just listen to each other, and once they see that is who you are, it's like the door's open.
Yeah.
And it's that way, so you get to play with players who know what they're doing and how to play together,
right?
And more so than any place I've ever lived before.
Interesting.
You know,
there is a really high level of musicianship here. That's just kind of, we don't notice it because it's all we know.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never lived anywhere else.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to go anywhere else.
Or do you want to, or no?
No, I wouldn't. Now, I could say that I would, but I wouldn't know where that would be. So
right.
I can't figure that out. It's like my son said to me, it's like, well, if you didn't play music, what would you have done? And I thought, and I was like, I'm stumped.
Idea.
I don't have another thing.
I feel the same way. Yeah.
But it's people. I'd make records with people from out of town. We'd go to like some place like this to get a drink after the session. There'd be some guys playing in the corner, and they'd go, God, these guys are amazing. Who are these guys? Yeah. I go, I don't know, some guys from the neighborhood. Right. Like, really, that's not some famous person? He's like, fuck no, that's just some guy, man.
Some
go, he plays so good. It's like, yeah, everybody plays good.
Right, right. Right, that's it.
So, you know.
It's a culture steeped in that.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Some people would say it's like wallpaper, you know, it's everywhere and nobody pays attention to it.
I mean, right. Right. Yeah.
But
you know, when you leave, and you know this too, like once you go somewhere else and you come back to this, it's like, wow, you really recognize
right.
yeah, yeah. how different it is. Right.
Now let's move ahead. So the suspects have had a long tenure. You've actually worn some people out. You have other people like Willie Green no longer travels with you.
Yep.
You now have the great Eddie Christmas traveling with you now.
Yep.
And we got to get Eddie on the show.
Yeah, you should. God, he's great.
Oh yeah, you know, tremendous. And you have Brad Walker is now playing saxophone with
yeah.
you in place of the great Jeff Watkins.
Yep.
And
Eric Vogel on bass now.
Eric Vogel's playing bass with mm-hmm. you because Reggie, his doctor finally said, you can play bass, you just can't ride in the van.
It was tough, yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, Reggie, I mean, we all thought Reggie was gone. I mean, you know, he's a miracle. He's a walking miracle.
We call him the Funky Miracle.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Or Timex, that's another nickname for him.
Because he keeps on ticking.
He does.
Yes, indeed. Shout out to Reggie Scanlon.
Absolutely.
You, Reggie Scanlon played with both Professor Longhair and
James Booker.
James Booker.
Oh, his James Booker stories are the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the one he tells where James Booker's playing, and he's playing with him there on, I think, on Bourbon Street somewhere, and James Booker's kind of like flirting with this guy while he's playing piano. And he turns and he switches his eye patch and puts a cuter, flirtier eye patch on.
Look at her bed. He's like, how's this one look?
Yeah. I love that. So
I'll be like, Reggie, how'd you get the gigs with James Booker? He goes, I'm the only guy that would answer his phone calls.
Yeah. Proximity is so important in the music business.
Answer the phone. Answer the phone.
In life, actually,
yeah.
in general.
Yeah.
You
right,
know?
Right.
Yeah, it's the people who succeed are the people who are there.
Right.
Prepared to succeed.
Yeah.
Tell us about how you get involved in the schools of rock.
So that was, I was looking for camps for my daughter, who's now 13, but she was 5 at the time. And it was the first summer that she didn't have daycare. Right, so I had to find something for her to do. And I'm looking for camps for music because she's showing like some kind of penchant for music. And surprisingly, there's not a lot of music camps in New Orleans
no.
that aren't jazz. There
right.
was one all-girl rock and roll camp, which I think is really cool. I'm not sure if it still exists. But I couldn't find much. But in the process of looking, I stumbled across this School of Rock franchise.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea it was a brick and mortar thing. I thought it was a Jack Black movie.
Right.
Like everybody
yeah.
else.
You should have sent it to my clown camp.
I would have loved that.
I had a clown camp for years.
Yeah.
Back
like creepy
right
clowns
after,
or?
No, we had a VW van in the backyard. That was basically it.
Lollipops?
And there was food and, you know, water balloons and lots of confetti.
That sounds terrifying.
Yeah, like that was my...
Rip Taylor.
It was right after Katrina for a couple summers.
Yeah.
Clown
yeah, it
camp.
Was successful.
Yeah. I just couldn't afford the shoes anymore.
Understandable. You know, they're huge.
Yeah, they're huge shoes.
Well,
they never
just,
fit in the
just
van.
Shining.
Yeah, yeah, but you could fit tons of kids in that VW
yeah.
more
I
than
bet.
You could adults.
Yeah,
especially
well,
when you stack yeah, them like cardboard.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
And they loved it. They were good kids.
I bet.
Yeah, they were good
they
kids.
They were, yeah.
Anyway, go on. You're doing this rock and roll thing.
Fast forward to looking around at School of Rock locations. The closest ones that were Houston and Memphis and Atlanta.
Wow.
So there was nothing
yeah,
in the tri-state
vacuum.
Area.
Yeah, yeah.
A huge vacuum.
So the people who made the movie, are they getting any out of this? Are they getting any?
So it's the opposite.
Oh, they're
so
paying.
School of Rock came first.
Oh,
yeah.
really?
Oh,
and
okay.
It's actually an interesting story where the guy who started School of Rock, his name is Paul Green, from Philadelphia, actually.
Okay.
This movie company shows up. Yeah. They heard about his thing. And they mirror or they follow him for like a 2-week period watching what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And they go back to Hollywood and he's thinking, I've got it made.
Right.
They're making a movie about me.
Uh-huh.
And doesn't hear anything for a year and a half. And all of a sudden, he sees these ads for this movie called School of Rock.
The movie comes out.
With a guy named Jack Black, who is playing this crazy character, literally modeled after this guy's personality. This guy's a crazy motherfucker. And so at the time, he's like, this is, you know, great, because there's a movie about what I do. But he didn't have the legal backing to sue them and get, you know, the namesake and all that. Fast forward a few years, and his company gets picked up by a company to start franchising and all that. And so he's now taken over the rights for the School of Rock name and all that stuff. But it started with this guy who was giving lessons, music lessons, and realized that there's these kids who, you know, they're trying to play guitar by themselves, but if I put them all in a room together and play some songs, they have a lot more fun.
Right.
And they learn a lot faster. And then he put on shows, and suddenly they're like, they feel like little rock stars. And they have a lot more fun. And you build confidence, self-worth, leadership skills. And that was kind of where School of Rock was born.
Man,
and that's what we do.
Man, just looking at the model of the program and comparing it to like someone taking private lessons, you think of how many more skills you learn in, you know, like your sort of program.
Yeah.
Where you're, because so like in New Orleans, a lot of people, you know, Loyola is a big music school. A lot of horn players go to Loyola.
It's a great school. Yeah,
it has a great program, great music school program. But a lot of people, they'll wind up getting on somebody's like the Jimmy Maxwell band or something for a Mardi Gras gig. Sometimes those horn players, that's the first real gig they're going on.
Yeah.
As a 20-year-old
right
horn player,
right.
And that's where they're learning what it means to be on a gig.
That's a lot of scales. That's a lot of theory.
It's a lot of times. And there's so much involved. It's like the difference between going to law school and being a lawyer. Huge difference, and difference between taking private lessons, knowing all the scales, and knowing how to play a gig. So many things. And you know, your kind of program, they learn how to rehearse, how to be responsible. Again, shame. You know, the shame comes in. Like
that's being, a very important part.
Being accountable for
it's not
your
the instructor
peers.
Shaming the students.
Yeah, no,
it's the students shaming each other.
Shaming yourself.
Yeah,
like,
but
which
don't you think
critical.
Some of these? You know, I'm sure. How long have you been doing this School of Rock?
6 years now.
Okay, 6 years now. But there's got to be times when you're like holding a class or whatever you want to call it, and thinking to myself, this kid sucks. Right?
This
kid sucks, right?
But you know, they
he's
will.
He's never going to make
they'll,
it.
They'll
so
sort
why,
themselves
why waste
out.
My time?
Because they're
you want
having
the money,
so
right?
much fun. Because they're having so much fun.
They're having fun?
And that person might actually
get
better.
Do they get to watch the movie?
They should. We encourage it.
You encourage them to watch
there's
the movie.
And even
because me and my daughter used to like watch that movie.
That's a good movie. There's a movie called Rock School. It's not easy to find. But it's actually, maybe you shouldn't watch it. A documentary of Paul Green.
Oh, man.
Who started School of Rock.
Oh, I got to see that.
It's like the real raw dog shit.
No, he's not bitter, though. He's kind of bitter, though.
Yeah, well, he was like,
yeah, he was
come
big.
On.
Yeah, he was fucking
bitter. I can't believe they didn't pay him. He
there's 390 schools worldwide now. He's doing
in
just
like
fine.
15 countries or something?
It's all over, yeah. It's crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's great.
Man.
Yeah, some of our biggest markets are Brazil and Taiwan.
I saw like there's a lot of
American music. Because that's where the biggest slave markets are, right?
Well, because
those are the biggest slave markets, right?
You know, playing music beats putting together.
Exactly. Child labor goes hand in hand. Yeah.
Now, so I was looking on the summer program of School of Rock. You know, y'all have, so all during the year you have programs where different bands and I guess you have kids coming in after school,
yes.
taking lessons and being in the, and again, this kind of peer-based thing with, it's like coaching. It's not, at that point, I mean, you also have private lessons, but as far as like being in a band, it's almost like having a coach, you know, like the person is coaching you through, you learn
how to. Yeah, so you come twice a week, right? You get the one-on-one lesson.
Uh-huh.
Which is 45 minutes, like any normal lesson. But you're learning songs for the show that you picked. And that show rehearses once a week. And right. so the show has a show director who is the coach.
Right.
And you're learning how to rehearse. You know, so you get your songs that the show director chooses for you. His teacher teaches you the songs, and then you go to rehearsal to rehearsal.
And you learn how to be in a rehearsal, how to run a rehearsal, how to be responsible.
How to be in a band.
How to show up for a gig.
Yeah.
How to dress for a gig, when you need to get there, you know.
Yeah.
It's not 5 minutes before.
Right. Or after.
Or yeah, definitely yeah. not 5 minutes after.
And where to score after the show.
Sure, that's
that well, kind of well
your steps. That's in the small print.
Well,
yeah,
well,
keep that in the small print.
Well, so what I was going to say is, so then you have the summer programs, and y'all have programs that's like camps that are, I guess, I'm guessing 5 days a week, sort of?
They're 5 days, and it's basically a one-week version of the full season.
Right. So you have camps that start like June 1st and run every week until like August 2nd or something like that.
Yeah, pretty
much. And they go through like, you know, boot camp for 1 week. Then you have like 80s rock camp. You have like a punk rock camp week.
Yep.
And
yep,
you have
yep.
something else and something else. And I was looking at this and I was kind of, you know, musing to myself. I was like, man, if you went through all of these camps, by the end of the summer, you would know so much about being in a rock band that you might actually have a dope habit.
Right, that's the next step. Yeah, and so all those camps are like, they're age-based, right? So we have rookies, which is for 6 and 7 year olds. And then the boot camp you're talking about is the Rock 101. Those are like the 8 to 12 year olds, beginners.
Right.
And then the other ones, like we're doing a Taylor Swift camp right now. On the North Shore.
Oh, God, really?
I know, yeah.
Because you got to do it. She's the most popular artist in the world.
Because we do. I have to pay the bills.
Yeah.
But it's awesome because these girls love this, right?
Sure.
And they're the older ones, and they have some experience playing instruments, and they get to play Taylor Swift tunes or pop punk or 21st century rock or, you know, whatever. Yeah. It's awesome.
I would have been all over it, man. If I wasn't already a professional musician at 13, which I was.
Right, me too. Because we had to, right? Like, that was the thing.
You know, it's like I was in this session, this Gardenia Moon session that I was talking about, and it was Andre Born was producing. He's a second
Andre.
Generation musician.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Cranston Clements was playing guitar.
I love Cranston, too.
His father was a saxophone player as well. I'm a second generation musician. That's how I know Cranston. I came in, I said, you know, I've known Cranston since I'm 9 years old.
Oh, that's
like,
awesome.
How do you fucking know Cranston? I said, he came in as a sub on my father's band. So, you know, like, we have this, you know, in New Orleans, maybe it's more than other places.
Yeah.
You have this generational thing. But,
yeah, for sure.
But if you don't have that, if you don't come from that kind of family, School of Rock is the next best thing.
Yeah.
And now, again, I'm glad you laughed at that last joke. But I jokingly said to you that you should have, like, some factories, you'll have a sign that says it's been so many days since we had an accident here. I was suggesting that at your stores, you should have a sign that says "so many lives ruined," meaning so many people you've turned into professional musicians, and you're saying, "Yeah, well, a lot of people, you know, most of them just come through and they get the experience." And look, even if, particularly if you don't become a professional musician, there are so many skills that you learn through this that are applicable.
That's everything
in life, getting along with people.
It's like
being,
you know,
responsible.
Like sports, right? As as an activity, you learn a bunch of things, leadership skills and all those things, integrity and work ethic and all that musicians don't necessarily get. But School of Rock does offer that, where, you know.
And if you're asthmatic or, you know, of the community like myself, you know, sport, you're
not
going to get
so good
through
at
sports.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. It's real. It's a real thing.
A good thing. Okay, well, we're kind of on the downslope of the podcast here, wrapping it up. So School of Rock, as part of your regular curriculum, you have public performances. I know y'all have some coming up, right?
We do.
And you, I believe some of y'all of your students performed at Bayou Boogaloo.
Yeah, a couple of years in a row now.
Right?
Yes. Nice. Yeah. Not Jazz Fest yet, but we performed I mean, pretty much every venue in town, from Howlin' Wolf to Zony Mash, we play a lot.
Right, and you have a Zony Mash performance coming up, right?
On, we do.
July 14th.
July 14th. It's actually our six-year anniversary of our grand opening in Metairie, and we have 11 bands coming from three different states. So we have five bands from Florida, three from Louisiana, and three from Texas that are all converging on Zony Mash to put on like an 8-hour show.
Nice.
of house bands. So the house band is an audition-only program of the best students at each school. Nice. So these kids are fucking amazing.
I'll bet.
And I mean, like some of my favorite bands I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Because their energy is unbelievable. Their stage presence is great. And you know, like we've done this, right? We're kind of curmudgeons. We're like, we play our songs.
We're jaded.
These kids are like jumping around on the stage, having a great time. You know, it's like how we used to be. So it's just so much fun to watch. You know?
Sure, man. More lives ruined.
Yes.
I say that jokingly, you know. It's like when I was riding around with Sonny Landreau, they were talking about this guy who put out a record called Music Ruined My Life.
Yeah.
And we all say that, but we only say that half jokingly.
Of course.
Of course, music
saved our
lives.
Well, you know, if someone comes up to you and says, you know, my kid wants to get into music, what's your advice? What's your advice?
Don't
do it.
Now, and I always say, because if they do it anyway, that's who really needs it.
Yeah.
That's what it takes.
Yes.
That's exactly what it takes.
Absolutely right.
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 You're doing God's work, CR.
Well, thank you. As are the two of you.
CR, I was during the show, you know, you say CR just stands for CR, right?
Yeah.
But I was thinking to myself, it could stand for a lot of other things.
Okay.
Like crack ringer.
Okay. All right.
You know, or Charlie Ringo. That's good.
Ooh, I like that.
You like that? Or Chuck Roast.
Chuck.
Yeah. CR could stand for Chuck Roast.
Yeah.
All right, this is my favorite, Cassius Rufus.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I think that's good. A good one. Or Cactus Rockjaw.
Cactus Rockjaw.
Okay, I was thinking earlier, Christ Risen.
Well, wow, that's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot of responsibility there. Yeah, I don't know about that.
Just fake it. He did.
Yeah,
they used to call me Charlie Rage.
Yeah. Or Cock Wrangler. That would be more something for Renee.
Ring was coming out.
Yeah. But you know, those are just
because of his community. You're talking about.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Community recreation, perhaps.
Yeah.
Okay. Well. I love your laugh.
Oh, man.
All right, well, Manny, I think we have a podcast.
Yeah,
huh?
I think we do.
All right.
Guys, thank you for having me.
Thanks so much, CR. It was worth the wait. And as always on the Troubled Men podcast, we like to say, trouble never ends.
Jesus. But the struggle continues. Good night.
Good night.
Everybody talking, everybody walking circles around the truth. Just the way. Everybody trying, everybody lying about the things they do, just the way it is. Everybody running, everybody wondering if it's them or you, just the way it is. Everybody stops, sometimes everybody drops a thing or two, just the way it is. If we're gonna make our situation, tell me that you're dying a little more each day. What you gonna do? Tell me about these changes. Tell me you're a stranger and can't play the game. What you gonna do? Say you feel like hiding, feeling like your life is always on display. What you gonna do? You say you can't shake it. I know that you gonna make it anyway. What you gonna do? If we're gonna make our situation better, got to do it together. Yeah, yeah. You may think that you can't change a thing. Open your eyes now, you'll realize how all these things we do can pull us through. Time to think about it. Time for us to work it out and move ahead. We can work it out. Time has come for healing. Trying hard to keep from feeling so misled. We can work it out. Instead of pointing fingers, we should really try to join our hands instead. We can work it out. Tired of all this fighting, now's the time for us to use the light we share. We can work it out. If we're gonna make our situation better, got to do it together. If we're gonna make our situation better,